live and direct. Back at it again with the Pan-African Perspective. This is Bro Diallo with the Bro Diallo Show, AM 1680 Q4 Radio. Thanks for tuning in. It is Monday, March 20th, in the year of your Lord, 2017. Got a lot to get into. I apologize for the slightly late start, but no use wasting any more time on that. Spilt milk and all. So let's jump in with both feet. Bro Diallo Show. Hey, man, y'all tell me something. Why y'all got letting Trump spook y'all? Oh, thank you. Thank you, Sister Nicole. Just got a compliment on my hat. It's rather sophisticated, mature. You know, I'm beyond ball caps and childish things. I do man things. I wear man things. No tube socks, just, you know. Those, I only wear those, like, those sheer socks with the pinstripes, pointy shoes, man things over here, y'all. Anyway, back to the issue at hand. Why y'all let Trump spook y'all? Everybody coming to me like, oh, lordy, Trump gonna have a World War III, North Korea, lordy, lordy, Iran, lordy, lordy, the diplomatic corps, lordy, the State Department, lordy, 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 lordy. Man, look, this is the same hustle they ran last time they were coming after the New Deal reforms. Now, you remember when Reagan took office, it was the same thing. And it's just always, and I don't know, I came in. Now, this is a bit before my time, but I've seen the videos where they would have kids have nuclear war drills, right? Where the kids would, like, have to get under the desk because at any moment the evil Soviets were going to drop a bomb and it was going to be World War III, and middle class, working class white men were building bunkers in their backyards, and there were all these contracting companies that could build a bunker and had everybody spooked out. And while we look into the east, my brother, to the east, my brother, to the east, while we look into the east thinking, lordy, lordy, you know, any moment now it's going to be nuclear war. Khrushchev is going to come kill us all. And at the same time, they were very deliberately dismantling the welfare state. First, they allowed y'all to make think welfare was a dirty word. You know, and welfare was like, oh, just the horrible welfare. You know, and here's the thing, like, it's welfare is like compassion, concern, humanity. And so while everybody was like saying welfare and they couldn't say it without just utter disgust, welfare. And then people are like, free market, as if it's some. But I'm not even going to get into y'all indoctrination and how just so easily y'all succumb to the propaganda. But the welfare state was actually something governments used to brag about. In the post-World War II era and the Marshall Plan in Western Europe, the thing that truly separated the so-called developed nations from the primitive, savage, dark places in the world was the welfare state. It wasn't, they didn't used to really brag about GDP or economic drives or how big the military was. The main thing that made a civilized, advanced nation, thus, a actually civilized and advanced nation, was the depth, the strength, the largesse of the welfare state. Free health care for all, free public education, public institutions, trains running on time, roads and potholes filled, you know, housing. Infant mortality rates, maternal mortality rates, those are the things that nations used to say, well, our nation is an advanced nation. Now they use different standards. How many billionaires, how many parasitic billionaires live in your country? What's your GDP? What's the Dow Industrial Average? What's the Nikkei Average? Now it's all numbers, but it wasn't all numbers. You know, and this is within our lifetimes. This is since the 80s. They totally change, and we just go along with it. And I know propaganda can be devastating. And as I always say, the people who deny the power and influence of propaganda are often its greatest victims. So I know how propaganda works, but do we got to be that easy? Do we got to turn over that easy and let them get in that easy? Can we make them take us to dinner, at least bring us some flowers and chocolate before we fall for their mess? So anyway, they had Americans thinking that Russians was coming, the Russians. Even black folks, we were literally black people and black organizations were shooting it out in the streets. The US organization, Black Panthers, you know, the Republic for New Africa, the MOVE organizations, every black organization had to announce, are you capitalists or communists? Are you red or blue? Are you with the reds? And some would say proudly and defiantly, I am a red. Some would, you know, try to walk the line. I'm more purplish. I'm what they would call not purple, really. It was pinko, if you're pinko. You're not fully communist, but you have communist sympathies or tendencies. Or you were just a blue, dyed in the wool. And we were beating each other up over white folks' business. It'd be like me and my wife in our home and our neighbor's couple, they start having a fight about whatever issue they have. And then my wife and I take sides on our neighbor's conflict, and then we start beating each other over the head over what they arguing about. You know, instead of tending to our business. That's what we do every single time. So if white folks want to have themselves a communism versus capitalism fight, then black folks, we going to have ours off on the side, up under the table as we await for the crumbs to drop. We'll start fighting. You know, they're using nuclear bombs. We using pistols, old rusty revolvers. But, you know, it's the best we got. And we're going to beat each other. We're going to use machetes if it's the so-called third world. We're going to use machetes. And we're going to beat each other up over white folks' business. If white folks decide we want to have a terrorism, war against terrorism, then we got black folks, oh, let and in one side, we have to be, we can't be Islamophobic. You know, as millions of Africans live under Islamic occupation. North Africa has been invaded and occupied by North Africans for centuries. And on the continent of Africa, you know, Islamicists oppress and literally hold us in chattel slavery to this day. Mauritania, Sudan, got black folks in chattel slavery. And we trying to avoid being Islamophobic, you know. So you got black folks, and then you got other black folks on the other end of the spectrum. We got to take down Islam. It's a threat to our civilization. Your civilization, homie? You know? And so every time white folks decide, hey, well, let's have a fight about gay rights. Can gay people use the bathroom or trans people use the bathroom? You know? And we're going to join that fight. I just would like for white folks to, because they have white tribalism. We don't call it tribalism because whites have computers and jet fighters. And high-end, high-tech stuff to engage in their tribal warfares. But World War I, World War II, and the countless numbers of wars after that, and the ongoing financial, that stuff going on in Greece? You see the Greek people, Russian barricades, setting bonfires, anarchists, and all that? That's tribal warfare. Bosnia, tribal warfare. The ongoing headbutting between the Germans and the British. Brexit, that's white tribalism. But we don't call it that because white folks, just like they did welfare, they have turned tribe into a bad word. So Africans, you know, rioting and fighting, all those just petty tribes, it's senseless. White folks fighting, well, of course, it's got to be reasonable, rational, and logical reason. Or if white folks are killing masses of other white people, then it's not just petty tribalism. It's got to be something very sophisticated and logical behind it. These are the people who gave us the Renaissance. But anyway. All the way back and to my earlier point. So they got us focused. They had us in the 80s as they were dismantling the welfare state and making welfare a bad word and coming up with this fictional Loch Ness monster, this Yeti of the welfare queen, and had white folks in the suburbs really believing that black women, single black mothers, were buying Cadillacs with food stamps and living in mansions, buying steaks and living high, and that the United States government went over $1 trillion in debt giving welfare to black women. And then you had black people in the inner cities who fell for the okey-doke, really believing that all these hardworking white folks and white people had all this, so much more money than us, so many more resources, so many more assets than the average black person, because they really work hard and they spend their money so wisely. Even though we sat and saw a depression every decade or so in this country, there's a financial calamity. But we really believe that. They just worked hard. They got up. They didn't drink. They didn't engage in gambling. They just were such hard. And if we were just had a smidgen of their white morality. And so everybody fell for the okey-doke. And so now Trump is like, I want to take it back. So Reagan dismantled the New Deal and took us back to, you know, pre-Depression era. But Trump was like, I want to take us all the way back to the Gilded Age. Trump was like, I want to take us back to, like, you know, feudal Europe. You know, now Reagan tried to move us back just to the Gilded Age, you know. But Trump is like, I don't want to just be a president. I want to be a prince. I want to be a king. I want to be an empire. He wants his little, you know, autistic special needs son, Baron Trump, that little inbred kid. Yeah, I said it. Screw him. That little inbred parasite. Who's costing Americans, what, they say $180 million a year to keep him and Trump's third baby mama up at Trump Tower. Trump is making a profit off of a taxation. But I ain't going to get into that. But Trump wants to be able to have a lineage, a Reich, a thousand-year Reich. You know, he wants to, and just going back to the Gilded Age, to the 1920s, the roaring 20s of America isn't enough. Pre-New Deal America, sweatshop, child labor, only the elite had high-end education. And we've fallen for it. We don't want our kids to study philosophy and civics and art. My child is working class. My child is a human resource. I want him to know STEM. I want him to know how to work in order to generate profit for a multinational corporation. Multinational corporations don't want my son to read Nietzsche, don't want my son to have an African-centered education, to know culture, to appreciate art and cinema and the finer things in life, to contemplate the origins of time, space, and universe. They want my son to know how to work them computers. Therefore, that's all I want my child to know, is what the employers need him to know. So we all falling for the okey-doke once again. We all are falling to it, and Trump wants to take it. But before he could take it there, he's got to get y'all riled up. He's got to do Sun Tzu, make a noise in the east while attacking from the west. So what's the noise in the east? North Korea fired a missile. We want to remilitarize Japan. Oh, lordy, 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 lordy. And all this stuff, and we looking, Russians, where the Russians? There's a Russian under every bed. There's a Russian in every cupboard. And nobody's paying attention to the boring stuff, the technical, the technocratic, bureaucratic crap. Nobody's paying attention to that. So Trump is slowly getting rid of EPA, slowly getting rid of privacy protection, slowly. But that stuff, he doesn't tweet about that. He doesn't tweet about and say, you know, I'm allowing, you know, coal companies to emit unlimited amount of mercury into our water source and atmosphere. That's not sexy. I want to see a shirtless Vladimir Putin on Saturday Night Live. You know, I want to see some mockery of Kim Jong-un. You know, that's a funny name. I could have Kim Jong-un. Na-na-na-na. So we get caught up in that. We're not even looking at the apparatus of the state. And many of us, because of this whole craze to be human resources, instead of be fully formed human beings who can appreciate a wide array of things beyond just our job and earning a living. So we don't know anything about civics. We don't know anything about geopolitics. So all we can understand is, you know, Kim Jong-un. And he bad. North Korea bad. South Korea good. Japan good. Russia bad. Chinese, eh. They make our stuff. It's a sad state of affairs. Really is. Anyway, I do have a guest coming in. Of somebody, I go way back when I had a high top fade and parts in my eyebrows. I'm just hoping she makes it, you know, here. I don't know if she's been to Chicago before, but, you know, it's been a minute since it. But, you know, interesting topic. Something that I will be learning from, because it's not something I know much about. But, you know, this is the way things happen. I'll wait till she's here to announce her, because well, she don't make it. You know, this is Chicago traffic. She coming from O'Hare Airport, so the time will tell. But anyway, y'all need to stop hollering at me about World War III. Because me, I keep my eyes on the prize. Oh, Lord. You know, I try to focus on what they don't want us to see. And let me tell you something about Trump. Trump really, really, really needs a false flag terror attack. He really needs that. He needs a severe international crisis. And now just a paper crisis, a diplomatic crisis is not enough. It's got to bleed. This is Call of Duty generation. It's got to be explosion. This is the Michael Bay generation. It's got to be an explosion and people running in all directions. He needs a major, major incident on an international scale, but even better on U.S. soil to really finally hit the home run. That'll stop this whole women's movement, Day Without an Immigrant, Black Lives Matter. That will just quell all of that. Zip it, zip, zip, zip. That will knock that down. But the problem Trump is having is that he's pissed off the people who do that for you. Where they now the media is finally talking about the deep state. And by the time you see people talking about the deep state on the corporate media, believe you me, they're not going to tell you the truth about the deep state. They're not going to give you any context, any history. It'll be like conspiracy theory. So now they've distorted, they've adopted and distorted this whole understanding of the deep state. If you want to know what the deep state really is, because the deep state is a real thing. But again, noise in the east, attack from the west. By the time you've got Fox News commentators, CNN, MSNBC commentators talking about the deep state, believe you me, you will learn nothing about the deep state. You will only be further confused about the deep state if you get your information from corporate media. And who, show of hands, who's still watching the corporate media? Seriously. It's like intellectual self-flagellation. I mean, it's insulting. It's physically uncomfortable for me to consume corporate media. And it's not the mainstream media. I think it was McChesney, the world-renowned media critic, the guy behind Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. He says, stop calling it the mainstream media because it doesn't represent the mainstream. It represents the moneyed elite. Rupert Murdoch is not mainstream America, and that's all Fox News represents. Is multi-billionaire investors. So they don't, it's not mainstream. It's elite media or better yet, corporate media, multinational corporate media. But back to Trump. Trump needs a false flag terror attack to quell his detractors because now Trump can't wipe his butt without massive, massive uprising. People are like, yo, I'll get more into the deep state, but Trump needs a false flag terror attack. And the reason it has to be false flag, because there are no real terrorists, y'all. I'm sorry. I know it's a real sexy story. I know everybody wants to be able to get old and tell their great-grandchildren about how they were part of the triumphant war on terror, how America was on the brinks of falling into Sharia law, and we fought off the hordes. The Islamic hordes. But that's not, I'm sorry, it's not that triumphant. It's not that heroic. And guess what? In this war on terror, you're not on the side of the good guys. You're on the side of the evil villains. You're in the Legion of Doom with Lex Luthor. You literally, the United States is the Legion of Doom. And Barack Obama was Lex Luthor. Trump is Lex Luthor. Well, Barack Obama's Black Manta. If you don't know these characters, look them up. Barack Obama's Black Manta. Hillary Clinton would have been Chitara. And Trump is Lex Luthor. I mean, just imagine him without his comb-over wig. Totally Lex Luthor. So we want to believe that we're the good guys and we're under attack. But the United States, all of these terrorists. And they keep renaming and rebranding them. It's like Coke, New Coke, Diet Coke, and now they've got a natural Coke. What is it, Coke Green or something? That's all it is. It's same, the exact same terrorist. Remember Saddam? Not Saddam. See, that got me all confused. Got my patsies, my terrorist patsies crossed. Bin Laden. Osama Bin Laden. Colabuso boyfriend, ex-boyfriend. Osama stated he was a Mujahideen. And the Mujahideen were the freedom fighters who were trained, armed, and supported by the Reagan administration. And when it was convenient, he remembered, just go online and Google or DuckDuckGo Reagan Mujahideen. And these cats were in the White House with their turbans, their Islamic guards, with their Korans under their arm. They were just, you will see, and all Afghanis are, even though Osama was Saudi, they are all Osama. They're all just a bunch of Osamas to me, you know. So you go and see Reagan sitting across from a whole bunch of Osamas, Mujahideen freedom fighters. And why did Reagan love them so much? Because they fought against the communists, the godless communists. They were beheading communists. They were also beheading women. They were also beheading children. They were also beheading Christians. They were also trafficking opium. They were doing all the every single thing that they do now, they were doing then. But they were also fighting communists. So you fight a communist, anything else you do literally is okay with the United States. But if you're not killing communists, no matter how much other good you're doing, you weren't cool with the United States. And it wasn't because the United States hated communists, because at the same time, the U.S. was shipping tons of wheat, tons of grain. While black folks were starving in U.S. inner cities, the United States was building up the Russian economy, stabilizing the Russian economy, and propping up the Russian people through food and other, and even technological supports. Look it up. Right? So anyway, Osama bin Laden, the man, you know, who was from Saudi Arabia, like the 19 of the hijackers, wasn't it? Like 17 of them were from Saudi Arabia. The master rhyme was from Saudi Arabia. So, of course, when the false flag attack happened on 9/11, where did we attack? Saudi? No, Saudi, Afghanistan, of course. It's logical. But we fall for that okey-doke. We keep going for it. The political, international, propaganda. We fall for it every time. We don't even make it hard for them. We don't even make them whine us and dine us. We just swallow the propaganda, hook, line, and sinker. But anyway, Trump needs that. Trump needs a severe international incident. And he's pissed off the FBI, CIA, ATF, DEA, big guns for pay. He's the only people he has on deck that really like him are the mercenaries. Formerly, it used to be called Blackwater. And what's that other big mercenary, private military contractor and private intelligence agencies? The one that Snowden worked for, Omnicorp or whatever. I'm sorry, I can't recall the name. Because they change their names. Every time there's a scandal, you know, they'll steal $50 million. Then they'll get a $5,000 fine from the State Department or the Justice Department will fine them, slap on the wrist. Nobody goes to jail. And then they rebrand. They go and get another set up another dummy corp, you know, go incorporate in the Cayman, set up new accounts in Switzerland. And so I can't keep up. I know the old names, you know, Correction Corps of America, groups like that, privatized leeches, welfare kings, the true welfare kings, welfare pimps, are these multinational corporations, the CEOs. So anyway, he has the private intelligence and private military. They're in his pocket. They're not. He's in their pocket. They're not in his pocket. You know, so Michael Prince, the founder of the paramilitary private group formerly known as Blackwater. In fact, Betsy DeVos is the sister of the CEO and founder of Blackwater. He's a billionaire special forces guy who founded his own private military. And he's in Sudan. They were running around Nolia after Hurricane Katrina with automatic weapons. They weren't formally deputized. It would be like just me, the Bloods and Crips, and it's a hurricane, and a bunch of Bloods and Crips get AK-47s and begin riding around the disaster area in armored vehicles with no sanction. And they sitting there telling the police what they can and can't do. It's crazy. But anyway, those organizations want to become the state. They want to privatize everything, but they're not there yet. So you have a lot of old school way back, dating back to the Cold War, old school bureaucratic assassins, hitmen, jackals. Everybody should read John Perkins. You can't claim to be conscious. You can't claim to be for or against the U.S. government. You can't claim to be anything but a drone in the hive of America unless you have read John Perkins. So, but, I mean, there's other books of that quality. But, I mean, he's the most updated version that I know of. But I'll come up with a book list. And really, we're talking about the deep state. But, you know, they'll go on Fox and CNN talking about the deep state, but they'll never bring people like AG or what's the other guy? John Perkins, you know, or Seymour Hersh. These people who really do the exposés, and that's how you know they're full of it. They'll use the terminology of these investigative journalists or these whistleblowers, but they never bring them on. You know, they just got somebody reading a prompter. And these people reading the, they're not journalists. They don't go out on the street. They don't, what they call beat leather or whatever the old term is for those old trench coat wearing guys with the press card in their hats. These guys are actresses and actors reading off of teleprompters. Anyway, I'm going down yet another rabbit hole. Trump needs a false flag attack. He has pissed off the so-called deep state, the security apparatus, the jackals, the hitmen, and the Marines. He's antagonized them. And as he's antagonized these institutions, he's failed to set up and make his full appointments to fully capture the government. So he has a lot of people in the federal government right now who know they're on their way out, but because of his slackness, because he needs to go to Mar-a-Lago and play golf, he needs to go to New York and make Melania earn her money, being the whore that she is, and slut shaming Melania. No, I'm not. Look, I didn't make that word up. If you look up the formal definition of whore, and then you apply it to who Melania is, and you can explain to me how this definition doesn't fit this behavior, then I'll apologize to Melania and her little inbred son. I will do that because I'm a big person. I'm big heart, big mind, just big all around. I'm a big person, well endowed intellectually and emotionally. So I will apologize to that whore if you can tell me how the very funded, because I looked the word up. So I'm like, well, these feminists, for some reason, have no real class analysis. And I don't know how you have any kind of a progressive movement without a class component. But, I mean, Nicki Minaj is sitting on her $80 million, sitting on a pile of money, and then a bunch of poor working class, single mother on welfare, drowning in debt feminists, have locked arms around Nicki Minaj and say, how dare you slut shame her? And now they're around Trump Tower. There's a bunch of feminists ready to die, son. They're ready to put their lives on the line. These poor working class discriminated feminists who probably had their pussy grabbed by the president at some time in their life. They're around there defending Melania Trump. Now, on their way to get to help Nicki Minaj and on their way to help Melania Trump, how many poor black women have they stepped over? You know, how many refugee women from Honduras fleeing rape and having their throats cut in a war zone constructed and orchestrated by the U.S. government? How many of those did they step on? How many women sleeping on the subway did women sleeping in the subway tunnels did the women, these feminists, have to pass in their vagina hats on the way to the Women's March? I can't say I understand. Like my brain is saturated with testosterone. So forgive me. Maybe I'm not evolved enough to understand this, you know, with all my black male privilege. I don't know. But as I was saying, Trump goes to Mar-a-Lago. Trump goes to make, I'm sure, in the prenup, how many times she has to service Trump is probably detailed and exactly how to do it. It's kind of weird stuff elite people are into. I don't know why anyone would look up to the elites. The elites are parasites. They're parasites. Even Michael Jordan is a freaking parasite. It ain't just the it ain't just the Rothschilds. It ain't just it's all the same names. I wish we could get some same names. The Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, the British royal family, you know, the De Beers family, all of them. But now you got the petty bourgeoisie, or the lesser bourgeoisie, or the courtesans, they called them. Because you had the royal people, and then the royal people would have a buffer around them of people who would sit in the royal court. But they weren't royal, but they had means. They're all parasites. I mean, Michael Jordan is a parasite. He has lived and sucked off the blood. He had become a billionaire by exploiting the labor of children in Haiti, in Vietnam, and China. And if Nike Corp and Jumpman or whatever kind of dummy corporations they have set up to launder even more money and steal even more money, if Nike and Michael Jordan had to, number one, and I know I'm going down another rabbit hole, forgive me, but if just imagine if Nike Corp had to pay a living wage, because the whole reason they went to Vietnam, why do you think? Why did they go to Vietnam? Why aren't they making Nikes in Detroit, in Kansas City, in Oakland? Why aren't they making Nikes in the exact same place where people wear Nikes? Houston. And I'm telling you, if Brothers was making them Nikes, if they had Nike factories in the United States, those places would be holy shrines. You see be cats burning candles and flagellating themselves out in the parking lot, you know? It would be so much love. And the people that work in the Nike factories, if they were located in the United States, they would be heroes. They would be local champions. Remember the McDonald's commercial? They show, what is his name, Darnell or whatever? Show a dude coming out of McDonald's and everybody in the community is greeting him as he walks. Hey, Darnell, good job. Yeah, good day. You know, that would be for real. Nike wouldn't have to make it up. You know, all the ladies, they'd be rock stars. And you know, Brothers would take more care of putting them shoes together just right than they take care of their own hygiene, than they tend to their own children. But why can't they do it? And Nike knows this better than me. They have whole staff of people, you know. And a lot of these corporations, they don't just hire accountants and lawyers. They hire psychologists. That's what's scary. You know. But anyway, they make them here because wages and environment. They have to adhere to environmental regulations, meaning that you can't just pollute the environment. Now Trump is changing that, but up until Trump's election. Well, actually, up before Nixon's election, it was also the Wild Wild West. But between Nixon and Obama, couldn't just dump. You have to pay a fine, end up with a Superfund site. So just imagine if the workers in the United States if the labor movement in the United States wasn't a vicious, pernicious, disgusting, racist movement that almost deserves to be obliterated. But let's imagine that the labor union was truly like it was supposed to be, an anarcho-socialist movement, like the Wobblies intended, the founders of the workers' movement, the anarchists and socialists who founded the workers' movement. They didn't turn it over to suburban, racist, white carpenters. But anyway, they were like, workers of the world unite. This is a global, all workers of the world have a common enemy. And we shouldn't allow nationality or national lines to do. Imagine if that happened. And so Nike had to, number one, they weren't allowed to hire child labor. And they wouldn't even be able to hire child labor because they had to pay taxes on the revenues they generated in Vietnam, in Haiti, in China. They had to pay taxes, and therefore the taxes were actually used for infrastructure to build schools and to give children. So, hey, the children are in school. They're not in sweatshops making Michael Jordan $1 billion, right? So no child labor. They only hired adults. They had to pay living wages, and they had to adhere to environmental standards. Jordan wouldn't be a billionaire, y'all. And I'm not saying Jordan wouldn't be comfortable. He had more than enough money to buy them corny-ass jeans. He'd have more than enough money to get any little teeny bopper white girl he wants. He'd have all the money to do all the stuff he now. Those stinky cigars, eat them steaks, shine up that head, whatever, all his pomade, whatever Jordan needs, he would have it. But he just wouldn't be a billionaire. He would be wealthy. He would be very comfortable. He'd be better than all of us. He'd be well compensated for the decades of entertainments and joy that he gave to your uncles. I don't know if y'all still watch Jordan. But, I mean, I know your uncles all know Jordan, that Jordan boy. So he'd have all that. But maybe he'd have like $8 million, maybe $10 million. But because he was able to violate human rights, able to destroy ecosystems in the third world and soon in the – and if you're destroying third world ecosystem, you're destroying global ecosystem. The planet is a fishbowl, y'all. So don't think you didn't got over, not in my backyard – that NIMBY called Not In My Backyard. You think if they, you and that's why you silly black people that are like, Native Americans had slaves. Native Americans, the Cherokee kicked out the black members. I don't care about no Native Americans. You idiots who take those positions. Don't let no refugees in here. Dakota Access Pipeline. Let me tell you something. The water you're drinking is dinosaur urine. This is a closed system. This is a fishbowl. Ain't no new water coming. It's the same water cycling. And just study, look up the water cycle. And if you're not into reading letters and words, they have diagrams of the water cycle. It's all the same water cycling through. So if you're letting them destroy the water system, the Missouri River, on Native territory, believe you me, that's tied to Flint.
Did the Native Americans march in Flint?
Actually, they did. Even Palestinians shows solidarity. Palestinians have been showing solidarity to black movements all the way back to Rodney King riot, you know, the uprisings in the 60s. And sometimes all the Palestinians can do is make a statement in solidarity because they're under genocidal oppression. But again, you want to have white folks. If white folks say they bad, they bad. White folks told us Indians bad. And Indians say black folks. A white man say black folks bad. Everybody hates black folks. Black folks hate everybody else. And the white man gets paid off of all of that. Now, I'm not preaching love and solidarity. I'm preaching principled support and principled opposition to all injustice. And then very clearly defined alliances. You know, and an alliance is about mutual benefit, not us crying over you while you ignore our pain. No, okay. So, but that's not even the topic I'm talking about. I'm talking about Michael Jordan's a parasite. If Michael Jordan right now and Nike Corporation had to pay for all of the pollutions, all of the toxins and all the ecology contamination, pollution and ecocide that went into all of the carbon emissions from shipping literally thousands and billions of shoes across oceans, trucking them to your local Foot Locker and Villa store. If they had to pay for all that, these things called externalities. If they weren't able to externalize all of the long-term ecological and social costs of their corporations, they would be in debt to us. They wouldn't be lording over us with billions of dollars. Philip Knight, who just recently retired as CEO of Nike Corp. About a year and a half, 2 years ago, they would be in debt. Not the students wouldn't be in debt. If we really tax these corporations, if we had a progressive tax code, the people in debt would be free. And the people that we worship as so brilliant, so great, so worthy to be, nobody's done $1 billion worth of work. I don't care how many balls Michael Jordan chased for how many years. That's not worth $1 billion. I don't care. It's not a social, economic, even a cultural good. It's entertainment, granted. And I likes my entertainment as much as the next person. I'm not particularly into ball chasing, but I can fully appreciate how some people are into ball chasing. But they stack. The reason why they pay ball chasers so much ain't got nothing to do with what they contribute to the society. It's because the ball chasers serve as a pressure valve. If a black man came home and if an average white man came home from work and sat down and read a book as opposed to watching the ball chasers or puck chasers, you might have a global revolution on your hands. And if the average black man couldn't come home and blow off steam, oh, go, Marty, oh, if a black man didn't have that outlet, you know, Zimmerman might be underground by now. And every police station might be up in flames across this country in the name of Tamir Rice or run on down the line, Sandra Bland. But because all of that built up frustration, all that built up anxiety, all that intensified oppression and crushing pressure, all that inability to connect with my wife, to connect with my children because I'm constantly working and I'm constantly have to push my children. You got to study, do homework. You got kindergartners doing homework and working so that you can be worthy to eat. You have to earn your living. Even though everything that our life depend on is not only free, it's renewable. Solar energy, sun, water, soil, food, it all comes free. If all money disintegrated tomorrow with the sun not still shine, the rain not still fall, and the seeds still not germinate. So we got the basis for every, the basis of all economy is the ecology. And we're destroying the ecology in the name of the economy. But if not for these really almost superhuman athletes. And just imagine, if not for that, if a brother couldn't chase balls for $1 million and I'm 6 foot something, 200 and something pounds of lean muscle, that energy, that high level superhuman coordination, that ability to follow orders, that might go to the struggle. I might be, instead of jumping to dunk balls, I might be jumping fences to get reparations for my people. I might be, you know, instead of tackling another black man trying to give him a concussion, I might be tackling the guards outside the White House gate. So I'm just telling y'all, just like the Roman gladiators, bread and circuses, they pay these ball chasers a lot of money. Because if not for these ball chasers, they are the pressure valve of society. Entertainers too. But now you do have some pesky entertainers and some pesky. You do have your Craig Hodges, your Muhammad Ali's, and your Colin Kaepernick's, you know. And you do have your Nina Simone's, your Gil Scott-Heron's, your Wise Intelligent Skip Coons. And you do have your artists and your ball chasers who are like, I'm going to take this platform. I'm going to take this God-given talent or evolutionary evolved talent and use it on behalf of the people. But they know, well, you know, Kaepernick is an anomaly. And they watch. They watch him very closely. Talking about Obama tapping Trump. Obama's tapping. Let me get on your WikiLeaks. Get on your Snowden's. Holler at your boy Assange. Because they had files on Nina Simone. They had files on every black artist that said anything halfway decent. That said anything above, I want to screw a woman. You know, if you wasn't talking about sex and killing other black folks, then you had a file. In the 60s, Gil Scott-Heron had a file. Not only Dick Gregory, he was a comedian. And he made some jokes about white folks. He said, hey, I think America might not be as great a place as they told us it was when I was in school. File on your ass. And then the feds ran up in his spot. Tax trouble the whole nine. So I'm not saying that all, but they know 99%. Of these people we put in these elevated positions to be worshipped by the unwashed masses are going to toe the line. To the point where if somebody does deviate from toeing the line, we can afford it. In fact, it reinforces. Because if we have a Kaepernick, you know, if we got T.I., you know, and who wears a Black Lives Matter, takes off his Versace silk shirt and puts on a Black Lives Matter t-shirt. If you have a Nick Cannon who takes off his ball caps and puts on a silly ass looking turban, you know, I mean, he's like, I'm done using my corniness to entertain white people. I'm gonna use my corniness to liberate my people. Thank you. We could use that corniness. Bring the corniness back home, Nick Cannon. So, I mean, but when the few people do deviate from the script, it's tolerable. It could be done. But I'm saying all that to say is you should not be celebrating Nicki Minaj and her 80 million or Trump. No. What's the dude? Jordan and his billion. They're petty parasites. They're parasites. You don't get that kind of money without hyper exploitation. And like I said, I'm not even anti-elitist. I see people that have skills and talents that blow my mind, that are able to do things that well oppress me, And if we were in a traditional tribal situation, I'm like, hey, give him an extra antelope hoof. You know, give him an extra basket of jackfruit. This guy's out of sight. Let's show our appreciation for the extra talent that he has and that he shares with the rest of us. But we don't say give him everything while we starve. Now, whoa, you go from being an asset to your people to being a burden on the people. And I don't care how much talent you have, but when you become go from being an asset to being a parasite, a burden, then we got to apply the class analysis. That's all. You ain't a hater. You're intelligent. And all the way back, I'm sorry, let me get off Jordan, get back to Trump. Y'all better hope that Trump continues to antagonize the security apparatus, the so-called deep state. Y'all better hope that this beef comes up. And instead of explain, like, we really believe that only white people can divide and conquer. Only white people, the elite whites especially, can identify major or minor disputes or rifts within the black community. Christian, black Christians, black Muslim, black men, black women, black educated, black versus black non-formally educated, black formally educated versus black non-formally educated. Because black folks, I seen a lot of folks who ain't got no letters after their name or no paper. They real slick. Oh, I'm rambling. Yo, I'm going to take a break. But the bottom line is we could do the same. And ain't no reason why we can't exploit the Republican Civil War. You got the evangelical branch, you got the corporatist branch, and you got the Ayn Randy objectivist. There's all kind of sects within the tribe called the Republican Party. But we just sit back and be like, oh, I don't like them. Get in. Join your local Republican Party. You'll be the only brother there. You'll be a gem. You know? But anyway, let's take a musical break, and we'll be back with our guest. You listen to Bro Diallo Show, AM 1680 Q4 Radio, broadcasting out of the Sanctuary Hypocrisy City known as Chicago.
Don't criticize it. I will advertise it. Some call it tampi. Some call it the weed. Some call it marijuana. Yeah. Some of them call it ganja. Legalize it, yeah, yeah, and I will advertise it. Singers smoking and players of instruments too. Legalize it, yeah, yeah, that's the best thing you can do. I will advertise it.
good for the food. Good for asthma. Good for tuberculosis. Even humara. Don't criticize it. Legalize it, yeah, yeah. I will advertise it. Birds eat it. Ants love it. Fowls eat it. Goats love to play with it. So you got to legalize it. And don't criticize it. Legalize it, yeah.
Thank you.
right, that was You, Roy, Chalice and Adipolis, preceded by, you know, the classic, Peter Tosh, Legalize It, you know, and King Dita. See, I don't like playing Peter Tosh, because King Dita said that Peter Tosh was better than Nesta Marley. And I just, this isn't a show about controversy. So, since I'm Team Marley, and he's Team Tosh. But anyway, that's a whole nother topic. We have a guest here, and you notice there was a theme of Marijuana. So, I have an old friend that, like I said earlier in the show, I've known this sister since I had a high top fade and parts in my eyebrows. And now she's a medical professional who's providing a service to the community. And we're going to allow everyone to introduce themselves. Your mics are live now. Make sure you speak directly into the mic.
Aloha, my name is Mei Fuimaono -Po. I'm a family nurse practitioner, and I'm coming straight to you from Honolulu, Hawaii, even though I'm in Chicago.
And so are you enjoying the Chicago icebox, the Arctic?
I am not. I was not prepared. But this, you have a beautiful city. Like, it's such a beautiful city. Like,
Very pretty.
Just driving around, every little building we pass, it's just, like, so ornate. It reminds me a lot of Kansas City.
Yes. You know? More intense. That's what I said. You know, it's more intense. It's not, like, the people of Chicago have, like, a Midwest disposition and mentality. Right. But the infrastructure here is like a metropolis, like New York, you know, yeah. So... It's an interesting mix. But don't worry about that. Enjoy it while you can, because it's all deteriorating. Seriously. With Mayor, I don't even like calling him Emmanuel. I like calling him Mayor IDF, Israeli Defense Force, dual citizen, Zionist, and the parasitic multi-billionaire Governor Rauner. They don't want to invest in the... That's not what we're here to talk about. See, people, most, and this is good that you're here, because I guess people that listen to me are going to probably need your services, because I can tear down anything. Just say anything. Puppies, bunny rabbits, I can tell you the negative sides. I'll bring up puppy meals and rabbit rabies. It doesn't matter. Anything. Say something, and I guarantee you I can tell you the worst sides of it. But anyway, yeah, you're trying to compliment my adopted home city.
Right.
And I'm tearing it down. Anyway, let's talk about you. So okay. I can... have something new to tear down.
Right?
What you doing? How you doing? So, but the main thing that we're really excited about, I've been following you online, is you have now joined the medical marijuana industry.
I have.
So impressive.
Yeah.
So we actually, in July of last year, our governor signed into law the ability for nurse practitioners to do cannabis recommendations. Before that, it was only physicians. So now that NPs can do it, I basically jumped on it. So July, they passed the legislation, and we were open in September. So we're the first nurse practitioner owned and led clinic in the state of Hawaii.
All right.
And also the only Polynesian cannabis clinic in the state as well.
And she's a Hawaiian.
I'm Samoan.
Right, Samoan.
Samoan.
So what, I don't know the difference.
What is the difference?
So we're all Polynesian, right? So Polynesia is basically a group of islands in the South Pacific. Polynesians are Tongan, Fijians, Hawaiians, Samoans.
Which one is the
Maori.
What is the rock?
He's Samoan.
Oh, so why don't you be like, I'm a Rocky, and people will
right?
Be
like, and then people
this is the mainland. Like, I'm what a Rocky is. Oh, wow.
That's all we know. We've got like one reference.
Yeah. Right. And then the wrestlers too, right? Do you know who is that?
I have no idea.
Steamboat. Jimmy Steamboat Snuka?
None
Ricky
of us
Snuka?
Should be talking about sports right now.
No. None of us.
I'm just saying. I mean, just for clarification, if you want, I mean, that's our reference. You know, like I said, in the United States, due to our education system.
Right.
If
right.
you can tie it to a celebrity,
so
it'll
yeah.
help us know.
So the
like,
rock.
I'm actually a
is
rock.
Someone.
Right. I'm a rock.
We got to keep him. He's going to drift off. We got to
stay on task. Yeah. Please talk directly into the mic. These ain't the highest end mic. This is not NPR. So we don't have the highest end. So if you want to be picked up, you got to make that little line jump. Okay. You know, and I'm not really a radio professional either. This is, you know, this is struggle guerrilla radio. So, in terms of what do you generally prescribe? What is a basic client or a day? You go in, you put up the awning.
Yes.
You water the plants and you turn the sign from closed to open. And what is a day in a marijuana? What would you call it? Because there's a dispensary and a diagnostic slash treatment clinic.
Right. So we are a cannabis clinic. So we like to use the terminology cannabis instead of marijuana because marijuana is really the slang for cannabis and it has a lot of, you know, just like racist connotations as to why it was illegal in the first place. So we're a cannabis clinic. And once I open, patients come in, we do full health histories. So it's like going to your doctor for anything. Like say, you know, you have a sports injury, you're in pain, you go, they talk to you, get your health history, listen to your heart and lungs, send you off for labs or not, and then treat you. But my treatment is cannabis, even though I have the ability, you know, if I wanted to, I could prescribe OxyContin easily.
Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah. And I could probably have a super thriving business from that.
Hillbilly heroin.
Exactly. But I choose to recommend cannabis because it's safer, it has less side effects, and I think that it greatly improves the quality of people's lives.
Do you find that the stigma... Well, you're off in paradise.
Right.
But I don't know, for the larger nation, but you are an occupied kingdom.
Right.
Of Hawaii. So you with us, whether you like it or not, until you get bigger guns than the mainland. Do you find that the stigma of cannabis is being reduced? Or do you think that it's still the same and that the industry just has to power through that stigma?
So I think it depends on who you ask in what context. Because I think that overall the general population in Hawaii, like cannabis has been in Hawaii forever. It's nothing new. Like, you know, everybody's heard of Maui Waui, which isn't a real strain. It's just the type of cannabis that we grow there. I mean, like some people will say it's a real strain. We have definitely land strains there, like Molokai probably is more famous. But I think that the people in general have a pretty laid back view of cannabis. Like you're in a Walmart parking lot and you're going to smell it. Like it's just kind of everywhere. But I think that the establishment with cannabis in Hawaii is surprisingly, it's very conservative. You know, so
what, and I know I'm kind of going fast, but I want to get a lot in. Now that you call it cannabis, I almost said marijuana. See, I came up on Cheech and Chong. That's how I first learned about marijuana. Besides seeing it in my community, but the first ever marijuana documentary I saw was Still High with Cheech and Chong. So that's my formal education. So, but in cannabis, do you think there's any chance that off the wave and spread of medical cannabis and marijuana, that there's any chance for industrial hemp?
Yes.
And its many uses to again get a foothold? Because I don't even want to go into the history of how and why that was subverted by the pedophilic rapists we call the founding fathers. But is there any chance of that making a foothold in the United States?
Yes. Yeah, so actually, Hawaii, so we've been on this whole like legalizing hemp legislation for a good 5 years, five plus years. So they did a test patch maybe a couple of years ago where they grew hemp. And now where the legislation is going, because we have an end to the sugarcane industry, you know, just because they can go somewhere cheaper, right? Hawaii is an expensive place to grow sugarcane. So we're getting ready to have all of these large sugarcane fields that are going to be dormant.
Which is wonderful because sugarcane cultivation is highly ecocidal. It's very damaging to the ecosystem. Mm.
So the goal is to use hemp as remediation. Mm. And so that's right now it's just kind of working out the last bit of legislation. And what they're kind of focusing on is not having to have these expensive licenses to grow hemp.
Right.
Because I think that that's where we have some issues with, you know, our dispensaries. You know, you have to have a minimum of $1 million to apply for dispensary licenses in Hawaii.
I had a question about the politics.
You might want to say who you is.
Oh, this is Erica. I'm Diablo's
wife. We call her Dr. Mingo around here. As an insult. Because, like I said, we underground. So when we calling you doctors, it's a tear down.
I'm the diggy doc, y'all. That's the Dr. way you can say it for me. That's what all my students
ain't
have
nothing
to
brag
me.
About on an underground revolutionary guerrilla radio show,
he's
though.
A little jelly,
go on.
Right?
We class conscious over here. Jelly. Go on and ask your question.
Okay, so what was the political process like in terms of just getting this open? Because in Chicago, it was insane. Just the distribution of the dispensaries and how they blocked off certain parts and gave numbers to different districts and how many dispensaries could be in each district. And it seemed an impossible task. So to have a Native woman have the first one, at least the first clinic, and then attached to that, it just seems like incredible to me. So I was just wondering what that journey was like getting licensed.
So I think that the dispensaries definitely have a lot of issues, and I would never be able to afford to open a dispensary. Mm-hmm. I don't have the money. Mm-hmm. I don't have the resources. I'm not an attorney. I'm not an MBA. To open up my clinic.
You ain't got the money to grease the palms.
Exactly.
There it is.
So to open my clinic, basically, I started my clinic as like the concept of a pop-up restaurant, but I did a pop-up clinic. So it was like a 200 square foot, just tiny little
nice
clinic in a community
the picture. It's
space.
Nice in there.
Yeah, that was my first one. And so basically, I've been working like, you know, 60 plus hours because I don't want to get funding. Mm-hmm. Because when you get funded, people tell you how to run your business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think it's just been a lot of hard work. And also, you know, my nephew moved out to help me.
Beautiful.
And so that's been huge having his support.
So your current dispensary that we've seen online, I've been following it every single step of the way. That's not the same as what's going to open up on top of the dispensary.
So
you'll
be
moving.
No. So I'm in my big location now.
Okay. Okay.
So we were able to just basically, you know, work hard, save money, and move to our newer location.
Beautiful.
So our newer location, we have, two consult rooms and a waiting room. And so basically we do the certifications. We don't sell any of the products, but the dispensaries will be located downstairs and across the street from us, and mm-hmm. they'll sell the products.
Okay. What kind of are you?
No, I'm done. That was good.
What kind of results can the average? I know there's a large laundry list of ailments
right.
that it treats. But for the average chronic issue,
mm-hmm.
what kind of results can the average patient expect from medical cannabis? Is it the miracle drug that some people say it is? Is it just the gateway excuse to get high? From the two extremes,
right.
we often know that the reality is somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, I agree. So I think
from a scientific point
from
of view,
a scientific
as opposed
point,
to, like, dude, it's like healing the world, man.
Right.
You know, from a more clinical right standpoint. What,
stereotype.
Right.
Yeah.
That ain't no stereotype.
Yes,
that's
it
a
is.
Stereotype.
Everybody know. How come everybody nodded their head when I did that, though? Wasn't nobody like. Everybody was like, yeah, exactly. All of them. All of them. Every stereotype is true. I wish Obama was a Mau Mau socialist bent on destroying America. I wish Obama.
Rabbit hole. Answer quick.
Right?
I'm just saying. I wish. I mean, if stereotypes was true, imagine how wonderful the world would be.
So I think that they just released a landmark study where they had basically physicians, engineers, scientists. So it was like a consensus paper. Mm-hmm. So, which I'm sure Dr. Mingo is very familiar with, consensus papers and how hard it is to actually get one, right? Mm-hmm. So the consensus paper on cannabis, the three ailments that it strongly supports without a doubt is chronic is pain. Mm-hmm. MS, muscle spasms from MS, and nausea and vomiting from chemotherapy. Mm-hmm. So those are like the three strongest. I think that probably the number one reason why I recommend cannabis is for chronic pain. Mm. It's for severe pain. And I think that if you're using cannabis for pain, you're definitely going to have a decrease in pain, but also a decrease in inflammation. So what opiates do, because opiates, your OxyContin, your Norco, basically they work with your neurotransmitters. So they just tell your brain you're not in pain. That's it. That's why you're still, once it wears off, you're in pain and you have to take more and more.
Strict
and
symptoms, right. Only deals with this. Mm-hmm.
So cannabis, the way that it's different in treating pain is that it helps at the level of telling your brain, you know, with the neurotransmitters that you're not in pain, but it also helps to decrease the inflammation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we as humans have been using cannabis since the beginning of time. It's only been in the past 100 years that we've stopped. We have a ton of cannabinoid receptors all over our entire body. So, you know, if you're with the really hardcore cannabis activists, they'll tell you that a lot of the modern day disease state is actually because we have a cannabis deficiency. We're not feeding that endocannabinoid system.
Let me get my eyes back in place from that big eye roll.
Yeah, no, I have another question. So this is my father is suffering from Parkinson's with as well as dementia with Lewy bodies. And I want to play this episode for my sisters because I want to ask you, what are your thoughts about cannabis for that condition? Like specifically, you know, the Parkinson's gait and all of the different things, some of the pain, some of the hallucinogenic things that might be going on with the Lewy bodies. Have you ever seen cannabis help in that scenario?
So I think that there's a lot of popular YouTube videos of people who are using cannabis and the tremors stop. Mm-hmm. So I think that why we see that is, again, the work that cannabis does on muscle spasms, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that that's why we see the decrease. There's still not a ton of evidence out there for Parkinson's, but at the same time, you know, cannabis is not completely benign, but oftentimes the benefits outweigh the risk. And I always say it's something that's worth a shot. And if it works, great. And if it doesn't, no harm, no foul.
What about the risk of having adverse kind of interactions with some of the more typical dementia medications?
Right. So that's a really good question. So commonly what we see, so if you look at risk, so we always have to talk about the risk of cannabis use. Mm. So I think that a lot of the risks have been really, really overhyped. If you look at addiction rates with cannabis, it's under 9%, which is still pretty low. I don't really believe in cannabis addiction. I've been doing substance abuse for a decade, and I've never ever done a cannabis withdrawal in my entire life, in my entire career. So,
well, I worked in a trauma center, and we never had we had everything from over the counter aspirin overdoses and several illicit drug overdoses, but we never once had a weed related overdose or even DUI.
Right.
Every Friday, Saturday, we had a ton of DUIs. Not one of them ever was exclusively marijuana. Now, right. You might have someone that smoked weed and drank, or smoked weed and you know, ate balls, but never in my years of working in level one trauma centers was there ever any exclusively weed-related trauma.
Right.
unless somebody was caught with weed and beat half to death by the cops.
Yeah.
That's the only weed-related injuries that we had in my years of working in trauma centers from Kansas City to New York City.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I agree. And I've been in level one trauma centers for, you know, two decades as well, and it's been a similar experience. And but I mean, you know, when we look at the risks of cannabis, really we see, you know, you can get some bronchitis if you smoke it. Mm-hmm. It can cough. But cannabis, if you smoke cannabis, it's only going to last you for 1 to 3 hours. Mm-hmm. That's it. So the other adverse side effects that we see are, you know, some paranoia, some psychosis, but it's temporary. Mm-hmm. And when we say psychosis, it's mainly because of the paranoia, because it's a psychoactive drug. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it's like you eat a snack and it's going to go away. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. it's not this permanent issue. Like they used to say that cannabis would cause brain damage. Mm. And that's been disproved again and again in study after study that cannabis does not decrease your cognitive function.
Even people who are still developing, people who haven't fully matured.
So with children, it's different. Mm. And so I always, I'm a mother. I have a 13-year-old daughter. And, you know, she has no medical reason to use cannabis, right? She doesn't have seizures. She doesn't have any chronic pain. And so if she were to ever use it, it would be recreational. And I always tell her, I tell her the truth. I'm like, this is what it can do. I would prefer that you don't use it until you're, you know, at least 18.
Until you got your mom 22. Right. Right.
You know,
right.
Preferably 22. Why do you say?
Well, you know, 21, 22 is when they say that's when your brain is fully developed. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's a good point, because a lot of young people, I mean, I've been I was a high school teacher for 16 years, and it was very much, I felt like at some points a hindrance.
Right.
Because I felt like, as opposed to finding ways to cope with their stressors and finding ways to handle some of the issues in their lives and abating the issues of their lives that might have been traumatic or difficult, they would go to the marijuana in many instances to just kind of, maybe in many ways, check out of those instances. And I felt like if that was something that they were going to do recreationally later on, then it wouldn't have hampered their abilities to kind of form those coping mechanisms naturally when they were young. As well as the brain development issues that I'm not sure, I have no proof or evidence, but I did have a large population of students that would you know, partake in marijuana before they'd come to school, and cannabis. There would be a big difference. Cannabis, my apologies. There would be a big difference in the level of work that they were able to do,
right?
As opposed to those who would wait until after school or just weren't doing it at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I agree, but I think it's interesting that you brought up them using it to kind of help cope with some of the trauma, because the second largest population of patients that I work with is people with PTSD, mainly veterans. Mm. And so I've seen veterans who were on, you know, like 20 different medications, stop all of it and use cannabis only as a first line therapy.
I want to bring up the orange elephant in the room. Mm-hmm. Trump.
Yes.
And Jefferson Beauregard Sessions. Yes. So yeah, you know, there's a war on the horizon.
Yes.
There's a big battle of looming.
Yeah.
You know, do you fear that one day jackbooted, you know, fascist thugs are going to kick in the door? You know, what do you think about Trump's promise to make America great and take us back to the era of reefer madness?
Right.
And the 50s of when America was pure.
Right.
You know, how does it really worry you? Do you think it's just hyperbole? Do you just think even if he wants to do it, he's not a competent enough bureaucrat and administrator to even pull it off? You know, what are your takes on that? Because, I mean, you've got enemies in powerful places. For your industry has some new enemies in very powerful places. Not that the feds have ever been friendly to this, because it's not enough profit in it.
Yeah.
But does it worry you? What is your position? How is your industry mobilizing to oppose Jefferson Beauregard and Pussy Grabber in Chief? Which are y'all ready for this battle? Are y'all getting ready, or y'all just sitting on the couch token like, the universe will handle
stereotyping
this?
Stereotyping again.
The universe, dude. I don't fear the feds.
So
Gaia will deal with the feds. I just deal with peace? How are y'all?
I think the West Coast is in trouble. I think that the recreational states are in trouble right now. I think that they should be concerned. I feel like Hawaii, because we actually were Circuit 9, so we've had a Supreme Court ruling protecting medical use. So I think it's going to be harder for them to come after us. And honestly, I think that they forget that we're part of America.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if Trump didn't know Hawaii.
I believe that.
Was I?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, if it wasn't for the hashtag boycott Hawaii, I think a lot of people forget we're a part of America. So I feel like we're safe in that regard. But I think they're definitely going to come after the recreational states. And I'm worried, but at the same time, you know, I feel like the medical cannabis industry has some level of protection, you know, just because of the Supreme Court ruling.
And white Republicans are using it.
Exactly.
That's your biggest ally.
I agree.
Evangelicals.
Yeah.
What
Mormons.
About your money? Like, I read an article that was saying, where on earth can they put their money?
Because since the banks
are, right,
you know,
like,
that's a RICO violation.
They're scared to put it in
money
the bank,
laundering.
And they could just snatch it. Where do you put
yes.
your money? How
so
do you deal with that?
So, for me, because I'm a clinic, I'm good.
Oh, because you're not actually got
Because I don't sell the product. I don't touch the product. I have nothing to do with the product. Mm-hmm. So.
You're a kingpin. that's the way kingpins. I don't touch that stuff. Hey, man. I don't handle that. She elevated.
Yeah,
she at that level. She like at Jay-Z level.
No.
In the game.
She did say, when I asked her about the dispensary, she was like, I'm not the dispensary. I'm over the dispensary.
Right.
I'm over that.
Okay, we got a kingpin on deck, Chicago.
Yeah. It's real.
And I think that's an issue. They're trying to do some workarounds, but because we're on an island, if it's a cash-based business, it's going to get very interesting. So they're trying to do it. It's not worked out yet for Hawaii.
For the dispensaries.
Yeah. They're
so it is a real threat.
It is.
And who do you think are going to ultimately win? I've heard some political analysts saying this is the hill. This is the board that's going to break the Republican Party. Now, they can drone bomb the entire planet. They can take Meals on Wheels away from the elderly and free lunch away from children. But if they touch cannabis and if Jefferson makes good on his threats in the marijuana industry, that will be the end of the Republican Party.
Oh, interesting.
Because that's just how much underground support. Now, people are not going to go on the 420 parade. A lot of people, you know, like... what's the name? Cheney. And people like that who have chronic illnesses. Reagan, when he had Alzheimer's, a lot of elite conservative right-wing people, a lot of Republican funders are either invested in or benefiting from, directly or indirectly, from the growing cannabis industry. So they are saying that if they really try to make good on that. So I've just been reading that the cannabis industry, medical and recreational, has some friends in unlikely places.
I could believe it. Yeah. And I mean, a majority of the people that I treat are, you know, conservative, everyday working people, right. Which you wouldn't
Fancy
necessarily.
That. Right.
Yeah.
What is your greatest success story? Just the patient that came in and was just the largest jump, the largest leap towards wellness from the worst. They were this bad.
The kind of
biggest
case you put
space.
On your brochure, like
yeah.
I mean, I think it's always going to be my young vets for sure. Those are always like the people who, you know, have been in several blast injuries, can't sleep at night. Have a ton of chronic pain from, you know, having everything broken. I think that we don't, you know, I see the effects of Iraq and Afghanistan in my patients every day. These are young people who have bodies of like 80-year-olds, you know, and just to watch them be able to get their life back is huge. You know, like I had a patient who was like, you know, because I use cannabis, I'm off all of my medications, and now I can like play with my kids. I can, you know, because like I can't imagine being on so many medications that you basically isolate and are just staying in your room because you can't live.
You're not functional.
Yeah. And so I think that cannabis, you know, it treats PTSD, it treats pain, but it also really improves people's quality of life.
What about like the PTSD of like our Chicago youth? Is it universal? It's not just, you know, foreign entanglements,
right?
And so imperialist aggression.
She started touching on that. I was hoping she.
So when we, so you know, a lot of my my background is, you know, in trauma centers, and I work on a psychiatric team where we treat people who have psychiatric disorders but are there for a medical reason. So I've been in kind of the substance abuse trauma arena for over a decade. And one thing that we've learned is through trauma-informed care is one of the things that I teach. About 80% of people in the United States have been exposed to trauma. And of that, you know, around 20% to 30% could have a formal PTSD diagnosis. So trauma is not, and I think that oftentimes we think that it's only from war, but trauma is... you know, any threat or, you know, loss of life. So I think, you know, I also see a fair amount of women who've had domestic violence, children who were abused, people who've witnessed murders, people who've had family members commit suicide, you know, just a lot of different people who are dealing with trauma who use cannabis.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
Touching on the subject.
Can you introduce yourself?
I am May's niece. touching
what is
on
your real name?
Sasha. My name is Sasha. Okay.
She's the capo or sub lieutenant. Where do you fit into the cartel?
Just the niece. Okay. Just the niece. And I reap the benefits. Okay. So. touching on like the fact of her talking about inner city children. Who and how it affects their performance at school, and then touching on what he says about like the trauma that they go through, because it is like trauma isn't just physical or like war or anything like that. So do you think that they can benefit from it as well, or do you think that the way that they're introduced to it is like not good? Does that make sense?
Yeah, so I think that I think it's interesting. I think that we don't have enough evidence for adolescents and treating cannabis, you know, treating adolescents with cannabis. We have a fair amount of treating, you know, of evidence for treating adults with cannabis. But I think that it's definitely could be helpful. But I agree with Dr. Mingo in that with our children, we really need to focus on getting those good coping skills.
So what about the people who are like my age? So who are in their like early to mid 20s that grew up like that? And
yeah, so she's a Chicago native. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm 26. So,
and I definitely, I think that, you know, living in an urban environment can be very traumatic to some people, depending on what you've experienced.
Right.
Right. And I think that cannabis can be definitely more helpful than harmful. I mean, I always say that cannabis is safer than McDonald's, and the only thing that's dangerous about cannabis is that it's illegal.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's penetrate
point.
That
that's
because
a good point.
I've never smoked weed or anything like that. Perhaps I've had a contact high, but it's never been deliberate. Because you know, I used to run Garfield and Rich and them, a bunch of potheads. And but
you perpetuate.
I grew up in a house plagued by addiction, from alcohol, crack cocaine, and every major hard illicit drug. It was all, you know, several addicts in my house. So as in my own development, I'm like, I don't want any mind altering anything. But there's got to be, now we've established, and I can't even deny, there's no evidence that cannabis is addictive.
Right.
Even though people can have, people who have addictive, but they can make it, you know, you can get addicted to washing your hands.
Mentally addictive.
Right. But there's no biochemical addiction. But they're like, besides bronchitis, or mm-hmm. respiratory issues that come with inhaling smoke that could maybe be circumvented through edibles and things of that nature. There are no other negative or long-term side effects. And besides, you know, somebody, you know, I'm very close to used to, like, get high.
Yeah.
And so, I won't judge her.
Pay close attention to the exaggerated eye roll.
Right?
You know, I want to know if down the line, am I going to wake up with a butcher knife in my chest because she's having some reefer madness?
Yeah.
You know, I just want to know what, I mean, I'm just, no, I, but I do want to, I'm joking, yeah. but I do want to, so are there any risk
there's
factors?
There's been some really great long-term longitudinal studies. So I think that when we look at long-term, what we, one of the bigger studies was talking about lung cancer, because they're like, oh, if you're smoking cannabis, mm-hmm. you know, it's going to cause lung cancer. So they did a 40-year study on heavy cannabis users, and there was no significant increase in lung cancer in cannabis users and non-cannabis users, because typically when we think of smoking cigarettes and smoking cannabis, but it's completely different. Like, you would never see somebody smoke 20 joints in a day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so...
Me not know. The Rastaman.
Yeah. But even then...
Not the outlier.
Me not know about that. Me not know.
Let her finish.
Okay. But those are outliers.
Right.
But most of the effects that we see from cannabis are short-term.
Right?
Because... smoked cannabis it affects you for, like I said, 1 to 3 hours. Cannabis that's orally ingested is 8 to 12.
That's what I suspect. So the same dosage, though, or is the dosage stronger when it's an edible? Can you control it better?
It's more concentrated, right?
It's more concentrated,
and you can't control it. Like if you take an edible, you're like on that ride for like 8 to 12 hours.
Mm.
But with smoking it or vaping it, you know, inhaled cannabis it's about 1 to 3 hours. And that's the effect, and that's how long it's going to last. Like, you're not gonna have these long term cognitive effects from cannabis use.
And see, that was one of my questions with regards to what
Sasha
was saying, because when I was thinking about the young people who undergo just a tremendous amount of stressors, both internally in their homes, externally outside of their homes, with threat of violence and an infinite number of other issues, I wondered if, I knew that they were self-medicating, I just thought that they were over-medicating. And
right.
I thought that what they were doing was not really using it in a way that was scientific, pointed, and very, very planned, so that it could be healthy. And so I wondered if, the same thing you wondered, if this could be a tool for them.
Right.
If this could be something that could help them if it was dosed properly and if they were no longer over-medicating.
Yeah, so we've actually, you know, one of the controversies out there has been related to dosing. So we now know, because of science, that, you know, the average joint or blunt is about 8 to 12 milligrams of THC, which is the psychoactive component of cannabis. I'm personally more of a fan of microdosing, like starting at a milligram. Mm. And so that's why it's really nice to have the dispensaries, because you can get the, you know exactly what you're getting, right? You know the THC to CBD and the milligrams.
I don't know what that means, THC to CBD.
So the THC is the psychoactive part, and the CBDs is just, it's like a abbreviation for the cannabinoids. So it's like the other parts of
And what
of
are the difference plant. Between the two things?
So it's a whole plant medicine. So oftentimes you see... CBDs are like the newest, latest, and greatest, you know, like spirulina of 2017. Mm-hmm. Like, it heals everything. And it's just like a part. So cannabis has like over, you know, like 80 to 400 active ingredients. And the cannabinoids are part of that. But the THC is usually where people focus, but in reality, it's the entire plant beneficial.
Mm-hmm. I got some rapid fire suggestions because we're coming up on time.
Oh,
you're listening
gosh.
To Q4 Radio, AM 1680, Bro Diallo Show with May Erica and
Sasha.
Oh, Sasha.
Yes. Sasha. Now, one thing I want to ask. Yeah. You have a lot of free advertisement in the hip hop and reggae music. Do you think that these artists, you know, Snoop Dogg, B-Real from Cypress Hill, all the any rapper that's under 20 years old, that they rap about, you know, staying high, getting fly and all that. Is that an asset, or do you feel that when someone comes in that's, you know, maybe listen to these artists, do they create more myths and disruption about understanding and the promotion of cannabis as a healing tool? Or do you think they're assets in promoting, like the Christian Rite says, promoting that behavior?
So, I mean, I think that with anything, there's good and there's bad in it. And, you know, I think that part of what is good with, like, the music and the rap industry is to really help to normalize and decrease the stigma around it. Right. And make it more of a part of popular culture.
All right, because you had that one guy, the human fish from the Olympics.
Oh,
that ran
yes.
like a Phelps. Oh, he ran and yeah. he smoked weed. So you've got all these people, high achievers, high functioning people,
yeah,
who smoke. Barack Obama admitted to smoking, and you know Clinton didn't inhale, but he smoked.
Yep,
but he didn't inhale. So you have a lot of people achieving their dreams and rising to the heights of society.
Yeah,
and they getting high. So you know, I just would really be cool if like more rappers rapped about veganism and underground radio and other stuff that you know I do, urban agriculture.
Right, I hear you. Know,
you. Grammar. I would
be, yes, grammar. Grammar. You know, I'm just jealous of you in that, you know, in your industry, in your field. You get a
but
lot
do you think
of,
it's glorified? I don't think it's glorified. I don't think they're...
Cannabis?
I don't think they're putting it out in a positive way.
You don't listen to 21 Savage?
21.
I don't think that they're just bringing awareness to it instead of bringing like the good part of it and like the benefits that it does have for us. I think it's just kind of like
well, not clinical benefits,
like the silly side,
right?
Yeah,
but even indirectly, smoke weed, get money, get hoes, get clothes. Get gold.
But that's not
so you don't
want to
lump it in with those things. She said, though, there's good and bad, right?
You don't want hoes and gold?
Everyone wants hoes and gold.
I don't exactly. Want so, I mean, I you know, just the associative property. You would assume that all that's connected.
Yeah.
Cars, money, clothes, and hoes. Weed is all part of
but
that.
But they
so
could tie the weed into the veganism.
Yeah.
You trying to hurt people record sales.
No, nobody wants to hear
you putting salt in the
that.
Game. Well, look at what time. Man, the time goes by fast. I wish
so
I had
fast.
You on the whole time.
I said, I
so
said.
So much. So much. So much.
Like,
all right. Well, today was, I'm going to be talking about World War III Wednesday morning. So tune in. And I will be telling you the prospects for war. And I will tell you that it's not World War III. We're up to like World War VII. We've had about 5 to 6 world wars prior to this. Thank you so much, man. It's really good to see you.
Can she tell us where her clinic is?
Oh, yeah. Give us your contact info. And if somebody... Yeah.
So we...
Or can people contact you just for free, unpaid
yeah.
consultations? To bum off you.
To bum off me, yeah. So we're the... We're the Malie Cannabis Clinic. So Malie is the Hawaiian word for, it describes calm and serene. I actually named my clinic after my daughter because it's a family business. And we're located
beautiful
on 1314
South
King.
Oh, she's
going
to be so King. Popular in high school.
I know,
oh my
right?
God.
So much street
cred. Can I meet your mom? Yo.
And you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter.
Address?
Spell it. You gotta spell
yeah,
it.
So Malie is spelled M-A-L-I-E, Malie Cannabis Clinic. We're in Honolulu, Hawaii. And we can just leave like a link on your
and you're,
website.
Are you open to people sending you questions from abroad?
Yeah,
and,
yeah
good,
for
good.
Sure.
So
yeah,
you reach
shoot
out.
Us an email and reach out to us. For sure.
When you making it back to Kansas City?
Oh, maybe next year.
Next year?
We'll
be there in a couple of months. I try to get back at least once a year now.
Yeah, I love that city.
I gotta go see my grandma.
Malie.
Cannabis Clinic. Anyway, this is Bro Diallo Show, live and direct. Band Nation will be in the building following this show. Thanks for tuning in. Oh, and thanks for everybody, man. The support is just overwhelming. I'm verklempt. I'm fighting choking back tears at the level of support, engagement, and funds, y'all. Big up. I'm balling out over here on Bro Diallo's show.
You're buying all the tofu.
I mean, we got like organic, non-GMO tofu now. It used to just be the hard stuff. Now we get the high-class tofu. Yeah. Life is good over here. Thank you for the support. Continue to support the show as we build and expand. Shout out. Oh, African World Order, the aesthetics of revolution,
yes,
which is our only official sponsor. So go to the website, get you some radical goods, you know, make your neighbors uncomfortable, mow your lawns in a Kill Whitey t-shirt.
Dang, I'm a Kill Whitey shirt.
All right, but if you want to buy one, we'll make one. Peace, Bro Diallo Show.